This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you, Susan. And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning again from our Huntley, Illinois studio. I misread the temperature when I was talking to Matt. It is 66 degrees on my thermometer here and about 0.05 of an inch of precipitation since midnight, so it's a very light rain falling, at least here in the northwest suburbs. But great to be back with you on the Saturday morning show. We have a lot to do and talk about and guests to talk with this morning. And so we always lead off during the growing season with Jim Fazell, who will let us know that we are at the end of meteorological summer and moving into meteorological fall this coming week. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about what's going on in the garden and all that sort of thing. And we'll get to Jim in our Saturday morning visit when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. It's Jim Fazell time here on the Saturday Morning Show, and time to check the finishing crops in the garden and start planting flowers already?
Isn't that something? You'd think this time of year it's not time to plant, but yeah, it sure is. Anyway, there are a lot of things that need to be done. You know, fall doesn't begin for about 3 weeks, but schools are starting and vacations are over and pace of things quickens, so there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done now. And time is a little bit short. The summer isn't over yet, but it will be before long. And if we don't get started with some of the things, it's going to be too late. So there are a lot of things that need to be done in the garden. One of the things we need to do this time of year is to divide some of the perennials. And we don't talk about perennials very often, but a lot of us grow them, particularly things like iris and daylilies, and we'll talk in a minute about peonies. These need to be divided periodically, usually about every 3 years, because they get too big, they get crowded, they don't flower as well, and they need to be spaced out. Sometimes they're in the wrong place and you need to move them. So this is the best time to do that. First of all, before you dig any plants up, you need to figure out where you're going to put the ones that you are digging up. You need to locate the site. It should be in good sun with good drainage. And before you do any digging, I like to put a little bit of high phosphorus fertilizer in. Now, I know some parts of the area phosphorus fertilizers are a no-no. In fact, in Wisconsin, you can't use it at all. Or you can use bone meal. Now, that does have phosphorus in it, but it's very slow release. Then spade over the area 6 inches or more deep. And if you're going to plant some of the long-lived perennials, you might even want to go twice a spade depth, which they call double digging. We're not going to talk about trenching, which is really three spades deep.
I have to say, though, when you mention peonies, I always think of Carl Klim.
Isn't that the truth? Carl was a dear friend. He's been gone a long time, but he used to call me up in the morning. He had been swimming in his lake out there in Arlington Heights and say, "Come on, meet me in the peonies. We got to talk." 6 o'clock in the morning.
he was known worldwide for his peony production, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely, and it was gorgeous to go down there when they were in bloom, not just the sight of them, because they didn't really let all of them go into bloom unless they were trialing them. They cut them before they were full bloom, but the fragrance of those was just tremendous. Anyway, that's a fond memory for both of us, I know, Orion.
Yeah, get back to the planting, okay?
Okay, all right. Now, with the bearded iris, you need to dig up the clumps, and you need to divide them into sections, each one with a fan of leaves. Now, a lot of the iris plants in this part of the country get borers in them, which causes a soft rot. So you need to cut the bad parts out of the rhizomes, the roots, and throw those away. Then cut the fans back to 6 or 8 inches tall, and I like to cut them in a kind of a curve or cut them so it's pointed so it's neat, because you're going to put them back in the garden, and they're going to sit there for quite a while before they freeze up. Replant those sections in full sun if you can. Set those rhizomes just below the soil surface, and that's pretty important with iris, because if you plant them too deeply, they don't want to flower. Dwarfs, space them at 12 inches, the tall ones at 2 to 3 feet apart, and you'd be surprised how fast they fill in those spaces. And once you get them in, water them thoroughly to make sure the soil is settled well around those rhizomes. Daylilies are very similar. You dig the clumps and divide into the sections, just as you did with the iris. These tend to get to to the point where you have so many pieces to put back in the garden, you have extras. Now, a lot of neighbors like daylilies, and you'll be surprised at how many you can give away if you just let people know that you have them. Don't give them all away. You need some for yourself. But that's what we've done year after year. In fact, we have neighbor daylily gardens here that go for blocks with daylilies that we've given to people, even sometimes go out and plant them for them. Cut the fan back to 6 or 8 inches tall and replant the sections. Now, the interesting thing with daylilies, unless you have one of the really new hybrid varieties, which are non-aggressive, they'll take just about anything. In fact, the old kinds of the tawny daylilies that grew by the roadside, if you have too many of those things, you throw them out in the alley, and lo and behold, they grow. You can't get rid of them. Anyway, set the plants about the same as you did with the iris, and space them at about the same dwarfs at 12 inches and the standard ones at 2 feet. Now, peonies. Once you get peonies planted, you do not want to move them, so you need to take some care in getting them and making sure that they're in a spot where you can leave them for years and years. They don't like to be moved. It's not necessary to move them because they don't get too overgrown. Once you get them in a spot, just leave them there. So you need to be careful about selecting the location. It should be in full sun. It should have good drainage. And again, it needs to be in a place that will not be disturbed for years. Prepare the soil there to a depth of about a foot because these plants are going to get big, deep root systems, which is, since they're going to stay there a long time, need to have good soil to grow into. You can add organic matter and high phosphorus fertilizer, although it's not really necessary to do that with the fertilizer on peonies. They seem to do well even without it. Dig the holes twice as deep and wide as these roots that you have. Now, you need to buy firm, healthy roots. When you go to the garden store to buy the plants, you can get discount peonies, and you can get peonies that are who knows what varieties. If you're going to take the time to plant these, you need to find varieties that are going to do well. Some of the Clem varieties are the best there are. If you can find some of these named varieties and see what their characteristics are on them, that's the best way to do that. Buy roots that are good, big, and healthy. Now, it's important to set the roots at the right depth. Even though you dig the hole deeper, you need to fill it back in until you can set these roots so that these little pink buds are right at the soil surface. And you can tell on a peony root which is up and which is down because the little pink buds, torpedo-shaped buds, are on the top. You need to set those so they're right at the soil surface and the root itself about an inch below. Then you need to carefully replace the soil and firm it around these roots and water thoroughly to make sure that the soil is firm around all the roots.
I keep seeing that line, water thoroughly. So you do that with just about everything you do.
Yes, you do. And it's not to get the ground wet, although that's important. It's to get the soil particles to loosen up and to flow down around the roots so that the roots are well in good contact with the soil. If you don't do that, and we've gone out looking at problem plants where if you dig the plant up, you find out that there was a hollow spot underneath it. The plants weren't watered in, and the soil didn't settle around the roots, and the roots dried out, and the plants couldn't grow. Anyway, there are a lot of other things that need to be done as far as planting is concerned. We haven't talked about spring flowering bulbs. That's another story. It's time to start on those. We'll do that on another day. But anyway, there's lots of stuff to be done, and it's an exciting time in the garden. The weather is great, and we need to get out and enjoy it.
We can talk about that next week. Even though it's Labor Day weekend, we'll be here, right?
You bet we will.
All right, Jim. As always, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you a week from now. He's the man who knows everything about horticulture. He's Jim Fizell with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Over the years, we've had the pleasure of visiting with Rich Feltus rather often to talk about markets. He is one of those very good analysts of what's happening in the markets. He is now with R.J. O'Brien, and it's good to have you back on the air, my friend. Welcome.
Indeed, it's good to hear your voice and be visiting with you today, Orion.
I want to talk to you a little bit about markets, but there's something more important I want to talk to you about today. But as we come toward the beginning of harvest, what do you see ahead for farmers when they start to market this crop?
Well, it's going to be a very large crop. There's a lot of skepticism about whether or not it's as large as what USDA indicated on the August crop report. But nonetheless, it is going to be a record crop. In terms of price prospects, we're going to be building corn stocks. Whether or not the corn yield is 170 or 173 or 175, as NASS has indicated, we're going to be building stocks. And typically, Orion, in years of building corn stocks, the corn lows are put in later rather than sooner. And it's unlikely we're going to see much price appreciation after harvest. Certainly, we're going to have a gigantic autumn export program for both corn and soybeans out of the U.S. through the winter months because of the shortfall in South America. But beyond that, when South American supplies, when their 2017 crop starts coming online, our exports are going to be dropping off by a large amount. And with that, farmers are still going to be holding a large amount of corn and unlikely to see much price appreciation unless there's some sort of a crop problem that emerges in the U.S. in 2017. Right now, with a mild La Nina building, those years, Orion, rarely see major crop problems in South America. But there is hope in the soybeans because soybean stocks are not going to build appreciably. South America is coming off a short crop. The Argentine farmer going to be holding his beans until the tax rates go down early next year on the export program with their new president down there. In any event, we've got a big fall export program on, stocks that aren't building, still very robust Chinese demand. I think the outlook for bean prices is much better for post-harvest price appreciation than it is in corn.
I have to tell you, after watching this market for over half a century, I've been surprised by several things this year. The price reaction after the planting intentions report, the weather rally that we saw in early June, I don't think I've ever seen one that early, and frankly, I've been surprised at market reaction to the August crop report. Are you?
Well, it has been a very challenging market this year. Just to address a couple of those items, and those are very good observations and questions. Part of the rally up that we had through the spring was in response to the shortfall in South American production. And I think also, Orion, the market really embraced this narrative, this frightful narrative of a switch from El Nino to La Nina, and what that suggested about adversity in late summer U.S. growing conditions. And the funds, the managed funds, who were heavily short the markets at the end of the winter, bought into this narrative. And then with the catalyst, the trigger of the South American shortfall, covered their positions, and we had a huge reaction to the upside. With regards to the market advancing since the very bearish August crop report, that is just pure skepticism on the part of the trade with regards to the yield. There's not many folks in the marketplace that believe NASS with regard to these record yields. In addition to that, as we rolled into the week up to the crop report and certainly since then, China, which had basically been laying dormant here in terms of their October, November, December coverage on soybeans, they all of a sudden woke up and started buying. Their crush margins improved, and they have been steady, consistent buyers. And so between the skepticism on the yields and the renewal of strong international demand, mostly from China, our markets, instead of declining after the August crop report, have advanced. So it's another lesson that these markets can be very challenging, and as the news unfolds, you have to stay very nimble on your feet and react as it unfolds accordingly.
Indeed we do. I'm going to switch from markets now to something else because your mother passed away earlier this month, and she was quite a lady, and I want to talk about her because so many people, I'm sure, knew her. The headline on the obituary said Ramona Nagel Feltes, proprietor of Sunny Acres Farm, spelled S-O-N-N-Y, dies at 98. And then I want to quote a line or two from the eulogy delivered by your brother, Larry Feltes. He started the eulogy by saying, "Mom passed away in the same room she was born in." Some folks might think that quaint. My mom lived 98 years, married, had 9 children, saw the birth of air travel and traveled the world. She was beautiful. She led thousands of school kids through the farm and taught them until she felt darn sure they had learned something about farming. What a way to lead off the eulogy. And so many people, I'm sure, in the Chicago area knew her and loved her, didn't they?
Well, indeed. The Sunny Acres out on North Avenue, north of West Chicago, has been a feature of that community and of DuPage County since the mid-1950s, when my mom and dad started with a simple table selling homegrown vegetables. 2 years later, my dad ventured into the Water Street, South Water Street market to bring in fruits and other summer items, and that was a story that began and expanded into the largest roadside market in DuPage County, and that then later evolved into the Sunny Acres Fall Festival, where we, on a typical autumn, we'd have 10,000 children through the school tour, looking at crops, learning about farming, learning about the various types of pumpkins and gourds and squash. And of course, in recent years, it has expanded further into our night haunted hayride, which mm-hmm. is a real fixture and popular item. So, indeed, I've lived in several areas in the country, but anybody that's ever been to lived in DuPage County, you mentioned Sunny Acres, and there's a good chance somebody in their family, if not themselves, has been there at some time or another.
And you have to tell me why Sunny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y instead of S-U-N-N-Y.
Well, in 1954, after the birth of their seventh consecutive son, my brother Jack, they decided to change the name of the farm, Oakwood Farm, originally because of all of the beautiful oak trees behind the farm. They changed it to Sunny, S-O-N-N-Y, because of the seven boys, and that was followed with another son. So they had 8 boys, and then the last child was a girl, the youngest. And in any event, that's the name that stuck, and it seemed to be appropriate for a family with 8 sons.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, I would guess your sister was either picked on all the time or was terribly spoiled. Which was it?
Well, I would say it was a kind of a combination of both, Orion. She's turned out to be a wonderful woman herself with children and a very successful gal in her own right, taking after her mother.
Well, we're sorry for your loss, but we know how many lives she touched, and she's left quite a legacy for the family to live up to.
Well, indeed, Orion, the business continues on strong, and over Facebook this week, there have been hundreds of postings of people mentioning her and what the farm had meant not only to them, but multi-generations of families right. that have brought their kids and grandkids and so forth to the farm.
Well, thank you for sharing with us, and we'll get to you a little more often as this crop season goes on into harvest and talk markets with you as well. But thank you for spending time with us this morning. Rich Feltus with R.J. O'Brien here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 26 minutes before 6 o'clock. Just checked my rain gauge again in Huntley, Illinois, and in the last half hour, we've added another 1/10 of an inch. We're now at 1/16 of an inch of rain since midnight, and the temperature at 66 degrees. Saturday Morning Show, and as always on Saturday morning, we begin part two with Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. We'll talk about the legacy of agriculture in a moment. The folks at Wink Products Company would like to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. That means products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. The professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, but in addition to that, color-fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around now since 1947, and it is still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check them out at wink.com, W-H-I-N-K.com. Now, Samuelson says, as I continue my never-ending mission to help city people, that's non-farm consumers, understand what agriculture is all about and why farming and ranching are so important to the well-being and the economy of the United States, I sometimes get to thinking maybe I spend too much time on numbers, markets, weather, technology, biotechnology, and maybe I should spend a little time on things that in agriculture we take for granted, like family farms. They're not disappearing, they're changing, they're getting bigger. But I was reminded again this year at the Illinois State Fair when I emceed a program saluting agriculture and introduced centennial farm families, 100 years in the same family ownership. And quite a number in the audience stood up. Then I introduced the sesquicentennial farmers. And again, a good number of people stood up. Farms in the family for 150 years. That doesn't happen very much anymore in industry in this country. Companies seldom last that long, but here are these family farmers. And in the Wisconsin State Fair, a family was recognized for 160 years. Dennis and Mary Cummings, whose ancestors came from Ireland and bought the land from the government in 1856 because it had hills, valleys, water, and was green, just like the land in Ireland. 160 years in the same family. Then another note that made me think about important things. Ramona Feltes, a lady in a suburb of Chicago, passed away. She was 98 years old, and would you believe she passed away in the same room in the house that she was born in 98 years ago. She had 9 children and operated Sonny's Farm Acres and helped young people, thousands of them, who came from schools to visit the farm and learn something from Ramona Feltes. Thousands of kids through the farm taught them until she felt darn sure they had learned something about farming. This is really what farming and ranching is all about. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 22 minutes before 6 o'clock. And we're just a couple of minutes away from talking markets and agriculture from a South American viewpoint with Dr. Michael Cordonier when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is always a pleasure to have Dr. Michael Cordonier of SoybeansAndCorn.com join us here at the market desk, because I don't know anybody who knows South America than you, because you've been tied directly to South America for a while.
Yeah, for about 45 years, and it's always a pleasure coming in and talking to you, Orion.
So let's talk about the difference this crop year in South America and the impact it's had on our export activity.
Well, of course, last year was a very disappointing year in Brazil. They had very dry weather, hot weather. The soybean crop was a disappointment, but the second crop of corn was a complete disaster. The yields are still going down. They're just finishing the harvest right now. And the problem in Brazil is they front-loaded all their exports because of a weak currency about a year ago. And then the crops turned out to be very disappointing, and they ended up with a much smaller crop than what they thought. And then the front-loaded exports now means that they ran out of corn earlier this year in Brazil. They're going to run out of corn again before the end of this year. So they need to import corn from Paraguay, from Argentina, and some from the United States. And even now, the Minister of Agriculture in Brazil said he might have to import some soybeans because they front-loaded their soybean exports. Then the crop ended up being much smaller than what they thought. And it's all because of the currency. American farmers don't think much about the currency exchange rate, but in Brazil, it's really important. A year ago today, it was about 4.2 Brazilian reals per dollar. Now it's 3.2. So back when it was weaker, their exports are more competitive. So everybody just booked exports like crazy. But now it's stronger, so now their competitive advantage is less than it was a year ago.
And will the impact of the current market price have any impact on how many acres they'll be planting? Because they'll soon go into their planting season.
Yeah, they're already planting corn in southern Brazil, and they'll start planting soybeans next month. I have the Brazilian soybean area only going up about 500,000 hectares, 1.5%. That would be the smallest increase in a decade. And part of the problem is where the expansion needs to occur, central Brazil, northeastern Brazil, that's where the crops were the worst, both soybeans and a disastrous corn crop. So those guys have financial problems. And a lot of guys can't pay their loans. They can't fulfill their contracts because they have very bad yields. So they have a lot of financial difficulties. And there's a couple, about a half a dozen big farming corporations in Brazil that also had low yields. They did a lot of their business in dollars, so they got really hurt by the low yields, and they got killed on the exchange rate. So they have filed for reorganization. So the area that needs the expansion is where the financial situation is the worst. So it's going to be a small expansion in Brazil.
So there's a possibility that Brazil could import corn, soybeans, and they're importing ethanol.
Yeah, and they're going to be importing cotton, too.
Cotton.
Yes. The three biggest crops in Brazil all were front-loaded on the exports, and now they have exported too much, and they can bring some back in. So a very unusual situation in South America.
And then you have the political situation in Brazil. Could that impact agriculture?
Yes. They are in the process of impeaching the president. Dilma will be out. I think they did a head count in Congress, and she's going to be gone. That possibility of her being impeached made the currency get stronger. And that's not what Brazilian farmers want, because a stronger currency makes your exports less competitive. So it also drives down domestic prices in Brazil. So right now, the price of soybeans in Brazil for this coming growing season is just barely above break even. So it's not a very good situation for soybean producers. Now, corn producers have a very good corn price. Since the supply is so tight, they're running out of corn. The domestic price of corn now is about 60% higher than it was last year. So some guys might opt for a little bit more corn instead of soybeans.
So let's go south to Argentina, where they have the government to deal with and export tax and all that sort of thing.
Yes, when Macri became president last December, he eliminated the export tax on corn and wheat for like 25% down to zero. For soybeans, the export tax was 35%. He lowered it 5% down to 30. Then he promised another 5% reduction every year for 7 years until it got down to zero. Well, they're kind of walking back that promise now. They said, we can't really forego that revenue. Maybe we'll not do that 5%. And then they walked that back after farmers protested. So, well, yeah, we probably will give the 5%, but now it's all confused. So nobody quite knows if that 5% additional tax reduction will come into play or not. So the farmers are opting for some more corn because they know there's no export tax on corn. And when Macri did this, he also devalued the peso. So like overnight, the price of corn doubled in Argentina.
Really?
Yes, because the devaluation of the currency was like 40%, and then the tax reduction was like 25%. So overnight, corn prices just shot through the roof. So they are going to do some more corn. I think the corn area in Argentina goes up maybe 20%. The soybean area goes down maybe 2 or 3%. But see, there's not a 50-50 rotation in Argentina. There's like six times more acres of soybeans than corn. So you can increase your corn area 20% and only have a small reduction in your soybean acreage.
Who pays that tax, the farmer or the shipper? Who does?
Well, the exporter pays the tax, but then the farmer has, they have to reduce the offer they give to the farmer, so the farmer pays the tax. It's just, you know, inadvertently has to go back to the farmer. Now, President Macri told the farmers in Argentina, we're giving you what you want, a reduction in taxes. Now, for you, I want you to sort of plant the heck out of this place, and they will. They will increase their planted acreage a lot for all crops. It's going to take a couple years to get sort of the new areas brought into production and all that sort of thing, but he is giving the farmers basically exactly what they wanted.
So let's come north to the U.S. and North America. How did you feel about the numbers in the August crop report?
Well, I thought the corn number was too optimistic. They have it at 175. I have it at 173. I think we had some too high temperatures, both daytime and nighttime in July, and that is going to result in some lower ear weight. You know, they put in a record high ear weight, but they didn't weigh any ears. This is all model driven.
Yes.
And they said that 90% of the corn yield is determined by the weather in July. Well, obviously, they thought the weather in July was very good, so they plugged in a very big ear weight. So I'm a little skeptical about that corn number. Now, it is going to be, I think, a record corn crop, but I don't think it's going to break the old record by 5 bushels. Now, soybeans, I'm sort of on the other side of the fence. We know soybeans have been in August. August has been very good. There's a lot of moisture around, great for pod fill. I'm actually a little bit positive on soybeans. They said 48.9 bushels per acre. It might go up to 50 bushels per acre. So I think we're in for a record, a good record for soybean crop, and maybe just a small record for the corn crop.
Are we going to be able to sell record corn and soybean crops, or do you see the demand holding?
Especially for soybeans, yes. You know, our exports are going to go up due to problems in South America. So we're going to see a nice increase in corn exports and also for soybean exports. The demand from China is still strong, so the possibility of a better price, I think, is more so for soybeans than for corn. You know, we got a big corn crop. I mean, the United States is a big corn producer. But for soybeans, South America is the biggest producer. And we need a record soybean crop every 6 months. That's what the world demands. So if one of us, either here in North America or in South America, if they stumble a little bit, this big soybean supply can dwindle pretty quickly.
Last fall, there was some doom and gloom talk about China and China being able to continue the soybean buying. They have and maybe increased it?
Yeah, so China is going to keep increasing their soybean demand. Yes, they may not grow at 8% annually like they have been, but it's still going to be 6 or 7% growth rate. Their demand will keep going up, and they are the big grill in the room, so to speak, and they will keep buying soybeans.
Final question. Do you think we have seen the biggest numbers in corn and soybean production?
I think for corn, we have seen the biggest number. I do think we'll end up a little bit lower, maybe in a lower 170 range. Soybeans, maybe not. We might go a little bit higher in soybeans in future reports.
And we always get emails and phone calls saying, can I talk to Dr. Mike, or can I communicate with him? Can anybody talk to you, sir?
Absolutely. Send me an email. It's a very easy email. It's soycorn, S-O-Y-C-O-R-N, at comcast.net. Or you can look it up on our website. It's at www.soybeansandcorn, spell out and, soybeansandcorn.com.
Say them one more time before we leave you.
Sure. Email is soycorn@comcast.net, and the website is soybeansandcorn.com.
Always a pleasure to get your opinion on what's going on, Dr. Mike. We'll do it again before the crop year is over.
Be glad to do it.
Okay, Dr. Michael Cordonnier, soybeansandcorn.com. 3 days from now, Farm Progress Show will open in Boone, Iowa. Max, are we ready?
Well, Orion, we are all ready, and they are getting ready at the Farm Progress Show site at Boone. Marketing specialist with Penton Agriculture at the Farm Progress Show, Dina Morgan, joins us on the line right now. I guess the finishing touches will be put on, well, throughout the weekend and then Monday, and everybody will be crowding in there by Tuesday morning first thing. Right, Dina?
Yeah, we'll spend a lot of the weekend polishing equipment and getting everything in its final spot so that on Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock, we're ready for all the visitors that are going to come to the show.
Back in the day when the show rotated around to three not permanent sites, that Monday before was just a circus. It was a terrible crush of traffic. That's not so much the case anymore, is it?
No, a a lot of exhibitors now like to set up that week before the show just so that they have a little bit of time and aren't so rushed and hurried to get things in place on that Monday before the show starts. A lot of them just use that final day to do the polishing, put up the final touches, put their flags in the ground, do things like that. But most equipment will already be set in place by Monday.
There's been quite a buzz in the social media in recent days about new products that might be introduced and concepts that might be brought forward. A lot of technology that is rolled out. The companies, of course, bring heavy iron there to the show as well. It's one of those places where they really unveil stuff, it seems.
We've got a lot of exciting things happening this year as far as new products. Of course, Case is releasing something new, and I don't even know, none of us here know anything about it. So it'll be a surprise to everybody on Tuesday morning. So we're looking forward to that. John Deere has a couple new things that they're releasing. There's always lots of new stuff here at the Farm Progress Show.
Is it too late now to get your tickets online to come to the show?
No, you can buy your tickets right up until right before you get here because we have an online system now. So you can purchase your ticket and then print it out and bring it with you to the show. If you're on your way and you decide, hey, I want to buy my ticket online, then we certainly can still scan that barcode on your phone just like you would if you were going to the airport and had your boarding pass.
Well, on my personal Twitter account, Dina, I tweeted the show program. You can click on that at Twitter, at Max Armstrong, and you can go right to the show program and see it page by page. But I know that's on the website, farmprogressshow.com, along with a lot of other information.
The program is out there. You can certainly pick up your hard copy when you get to the show. But if you want to do a little perusing before you get here, that's a great place on our website to go and look at it and see the schedule of events, the exhibitor list, articles that were written about the show that our editors wrote, as well as ones that were submitted from companies that are going to be exhibiting here. The website also has information on golf carts and hotels to stay at and just anything you can think about that you might need as a visitor.
Dina, thanks a lot. We'll see you there at Boone.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody next week.
Dina Morgan, marketing specialist with the Farm Progress Show Orion. And, of course, I'll be there at Case IH at 10 o'clock each day, and we'll see you at 8 a.m. at high noon each day.
Every day at 11:30 till 1, Max and I on stage in the ADM tent. A few other stops before Farm Progress Show. We'll check those right after this on the Saturday morning show. Tonight at 5 o'clock, I'll be in Streeter, Illinois for their first ever agricultural symposium, Streeter City Farmers. Look forward to that at the Country Club in Streeter tonight. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday morning show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Radio and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.